Dobro jutro in pozdravljeni v jutranjih pogovorih na Radio Študent, kjer se bomo danes pogovarjali z Jurijem Landmanom, ki se te dni mudi na festivalu Sonika in skrbi za kreativni del le tega festivala soničnih umetnosti. Gre za v začetku striparja, kasneje eksperimentalnega glasbenika in sploh v zadnjem obdobju človeka, ki je ustvaril en kup zanimivih inštrumentov in se tudi v teh dneh s svojimi delavnicami v Ljubljani udejstvoval in ustvarjale so se različne stvari. Mi bomo zdaj danes z njim eno rekli, seveda v angleščini. Hello, Yuri.
Hello.
So, where to begin? I guess not with music, because let's begin in Ljubljana. You are here for the last few days. How are you feeling? And
I'm having a hangover. I went to the film festival yesterday.
These film festivals are tricky in Slovenia, you know, because you can get hangovers from that.
It was free drinks, so. Yeah, but I'm recovering. It will be fine.
How was the workshops?
I did the first one yesterday. I'm doing two things. First of all, I do a series of workshops where people can sign up and make their own instruments. And yesterday was the first one, tonight is the second one. And tomorrow night is also the second one, but the second half, because it's a big workshop. And on Saturday afternoon, there's the kalimba.
This is the Malevich string workshop?
Yeah, that's 8 hours.
Takes more time, huh?
Yeah, and during the day, I'm building a collection for Mota. Uh-huh. So that's just that's the separated jobs basically.
Okay, so you have one thing you will do in Malta and then you work on.
No, I work in Ljudmila or something.
Yeah.
But I'm building a collection for Malta and it will be here permanently. So I just give the problem to your city, and next time I'm in your city, I can borrow your problem.
Cool.
Yeah.
So you will come back for
I hope
sure.
So, yes. Because I'm not doing a concert this time, so perhaps next time I can play live.
That would be also nice to hear. So let's go to your beginnings, since maybe Slovenian audience is not so familiar with what you do.
Yeah.
But anyway, you started as a comic artist.
Yes.
So what can you tell us about your beginnings? I mean, also in this field you have made quite some breakthroughs and you were got some awards and stuff.
Well, yeah, the thing is that when I was a kid, I was very good at drawing, and I was a fan of comic books. So basically what the kids now do with games was comics in my age was comics. So I had the desire to become a comic book artist. I studied gimmicks, so something completely practical to get a job, basically. Mm-hmm. But it appeared to be that I was completely unsuitable for working in a laboratory because I'm very messy. And
okay.
So I took over my hobby or my fascination, and this became an ambition. Mm-hmm. And I started working on comic books while I was in my last year of study, and I think I was 24 when I published my first book or something.
Okay.
And these were coming of age graphic novels. Mm-hmm. So do you know what coming of age is? It's like Ghost World is, for instance, a coming of age. The movies like Kids, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
So it's like this adolescent problematic stuff.
Okay.
So no jobs, girlfriends, that kind of stuff.
And no, not much sci-fi going on.
Not at all. No, it was autobiographical. So it was really basically what currently is being published by Drawn Quarterly and Fantagraphics.
Mm-hmm.
There were some books at the time, but it was still quite new. You only had Mouse, Spiegelman, and Greg Thompson didn't publish yet. So it was a bit before. But later on, this whole autobiographical thing that Persepolis from Satrapia, I guess the name is. It exploded basically, and the graphic novel became more known, but it was still.
What would you say? Because the comic scene is quite into this sci-fi and experimenting, and you took a social direction into it with biography and stuff.
Well, yeah, for me it was more like this combination of the books I read. So I read literature and I merged basically the topics that occur in those books with my own life and with the drawing skills I have. So for me it was like an automatic yeah, it was no question about what the direction should be.
Okay.
And it's also, I'm not very good at making up stories. So when I tell a story about a shitty job, that's pretty easy because I've experienced a shitty job.
Yeah.
So you can just
grab from the experience and
open my memory and just write it all down.
Like a diary sort of form.
Yeah.
Where was music in that period of your life? I mean, did you play any instruments, start to do stuff, or you listened to some?
The turning point is it was really Nirvana, which you often hear from people from my generation. I was 18 when Smells Like Teen Spirit came on the radio, and I've always been fascinated on music, but before my 18th year, I was having quite a bad taste. I listened to Guns N' Roses and Red Hot Chili Peppers and that bullshit.
Okay, well,
the first album of Red Hot Chili Peppers is okay, but
yeah.
But Nirvana came on the radio, and this was also in the comic when I was doing the comics. It shifted from Adventures comics to Moebius and Bilal and Tardi, which are more advanced graphic novels. And my musical taste also became adult, basically. So Sonic Youth came shortly after Nirvana, like 1 month after I discovered Sonic Youth, and then Pavement and Velvet Underground and Sabado, and basically the whole cultural landscape unfolded for me in that year.
Was that also the influence that dragged you into music, or was something some other way happened?
There's many stories to go, but first of all, I stopped comic books a few years later on, but we can discuss that later if it's necessary. But the thing is that it's quite a heavy explanation, but I can do it. When I was 10 or 9 years old, I had flu, and I had like nightmares, and this came with distorted vision. Hallucinations, basically, yes. And it was not only the vision that was distorted, but also the sound was distorted. And I heard this, I had this dream many times in my life, and it's always this weird empty space. And there's this sound, it's like whoop, 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 but I'm now doing a vowel, which is low frequencies, but there's also overtones in this pulsing
it's sort of a head pressure drone.
Yeah,
something.
Yeah, and I was really, when I was young, you have this you don't know what's going on because you're dreaming, and has this to do with religion? Is this God you're battling with, or whatever, or Satan? But I'm not religious at all. But so for me, there was always like this religious conflict because I don't want to believe in God. Don't believe in God. But during these dreams, I had this odd hallucination. So where did it come from? And especially the sound was so unnatural. And when I was 10, I heard Pornography of the Cure. It's the third album.
Okay.
And that's the only good thing I did before I was 18. And this album has a remarkable sound texture, especially the guitars. They have a very bright, overtony, shimmering sound. And when I first heard it, I was really afraid of it because it connected me to my dreams. And over the years, I began to appreciate it. And it's still one of my favorite albums because it's a youth memory. And as soon as I heard Sonic Youth, the sound of Sonic Youth is even more, especially on Confusion in Sex and Bad Moon Rising, those early albums, it features the same angry, shimmery, dark sound, but even more heavy than on the Pornography album of The Cure. And that's when I had a pop encyclopedia with biographies of bands, and I discovered that they modified their guitars, so they put drumsticks in between. And later on, I found out what causes the things on the Cure is that he played on a Jaguar, and on the Jaguar, by accident, certain frets resonate long, especially when you play high tones. The tailpiece feeds back, and then you get this specific sound. And Sonic Youth did it with drumsticks, and they also played with Jazz Masters later on in their careers, but for the same reasons, because you can enhance the sound of the guitar strings. So this was, for me, is the starting point to go into music, because I want to explore that, basically, the nightmare sound.
You actually immediately start to have things to do with prepared instruments.
Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
never
yeah.
learned no. like a proper guitar or
no, the
something.
Thing is that I'm coming from a shitty town, and when you would have bought a guitar and take lessons, then there was a shitty teacher telling you how to play jazz chords or blues scales. And basically Sonic Youth and especially the first albums are the opposite of tradition.
They
throw everything away and they start new. And and I was a fan of that approach. And also I'm not a very traditional guy, so I don't want to do anything with scales. Yeah, so I really started preparing it and tapping on it and tapping on the bodies and that kind of stuff, yeah.
Did you ever imagine that in the next years you will be making an instrument for Sonic Youth?
No, that was like a very shocking moment for me, yeah. The cycle was complete.
What was the first instrument you prepared? So it was a guitar, but you also got some stuff with lute and old and this sort of old traditional instruments?
No, well, the thing is that I started working with the drumsticks, just like Sonic Youth, and because I was trained as a chemical analyst, I understood parts about physics. So, okay. For instance, when you separate the string in two and you plug one side, the other side hums along like a tuning fork.
Okay.
And this also occurs on 1/3 and 1/4 of the length.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the simple ratios, which overlap with the harmonics of the strings, if you put the bridge there, then the magic occurs, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And if you put the bridge not on the logical ratio, the magic disappears. So it's a dead sound. And on the ratios, you have the ringing tone. And I was always frustrated on the guitars because the guitars have frets. So if you have the bar, you cannot move it because it clangs against the frets.
So it's underneath
the strings, and it's in between the strings and the fretboard. So I wanted to have an instrument that had no frets and had more strings than six, because when you have the bar, your fretboard doesn't work anymore. So you only have six notes.
Okay.
So I wanted to have 12 notes. Yeah. So I have all 12 notes of the piano keyboard. So this was a table instrument with a movable system.
Mm-hmm.
So I could leave my guitar alone, and I could just play normal on the guitar if I had the tendency to do that.
Uh-huh.
And when I want to go weird, I went to the table.
And you use like basic materials like wood and strings. This was a wood plate, or
it was a table leg, but a table leg not like four legs, but there was only two legs, so it was a really big piece of wood.
Okay.
And my girlfriend really disliked the table, so I was like really happy. Okay, we keep the blade. I buy you four new legs, and now I want to have the other two. So this was already made. So the wood was already there.
Okay.
I only had to drill in the holes, and it was very easy.
So you recycle a lot also in this manner?
But it was for economical reasons, because I didn't have any money.
Okay.
So I just collect old wood and old parts. Nowadays, fortunately, I'm doing workshops, so the money comes in, and it's more easy for me to have access to big amounts of good materials. But at that time, it was really a struggle to get...
To get you creative in a way.
Yeah, because every time it costs you like 100, 200 euros, and so you can only make a few a year because of the money and not because of the labor.
How was with electronic parts? You also took old parts from different instruments, or like magnets and wirings and stuff?
No, the first thing is the first instruments I made were made from guitars, so I just destroyed my old Ibanez. And I got basically when you're into bands, you always meet people who have a shitty guitar lying around, because they start with the cheap one and then they buy. So I got all, and I know quite some bands in Holland, so I got all the shitty cheap guitars from my friends, and I was able to deconstruct them and use the pickups. Basically, it was only the pickups and the necks I reused.
There was a few bands you formed in the first period, like you started to play. Can you tell a little bit more about maybe what you did in that day with bands? Was it more like this edgy, like we're gonna experiment and we're gonna make this weird music, or it was still influenced by Cure, Nirvana and the band kind of music, you know?
Well, the thing was that I started building in 2000, and in 2006 I had finished like 20 guitars or something like that, or not guitars but something with strings, and it kind of went off the road because I made an instrument and then I played for 5 minutes on it. Okay, that's nice. Let's build another one which can do that. But I forgot to make music.
Okay.
Yeah. So my attic was full of wood with strings on it, but nobody in the world knew that the attic existed. Yeah. So and I didn't publish any music anymore because I was only focused on designing. And I got so frustrated about how do you say this? I make experimental music, and at that time I made experimental pop music, which is a very narrow niche. So you're always competing with the shitty pop bands, and they have the audiences and they have the fees, and I'm always working for 20 people. So I was really frustrated about that aspect.
It was still experimental, more influenced than the pop.
So I decided to quit my career as a musician at that time because it was just useless, because you couldn't explore it. So in 2006 I had this 20 instruments lying around, and I was like, okay, this is not going well. So I was picking up the plan to approach bands and give away the instruments to the bands as a way of promotion.
Okay.
And at that time, Liars had published their second album already, which was like a nightmare for them because they went down in sales, so they were basically unemployed. And then Drums Not Dead recovered their career, basically. That's the third album, and this thing was already illegal on internet, and I heard it, and it referred very much to me to the early Sonic Youth and the Cure. So for me it was like, wow, this is the first band in 10 years that has this specific dark vibe, and it matches with my stuff. And I knew they were completely broke in Berlin, so I mailed them like, okay, I'm an instrument builder, I want to give you something. And of course they had no money, so they accepted the offer. And this was a hard condition for me because I didn't want the money, because when you have the money involved, it's blocking the system, because then they demand you out, but I don't want this, I want that. And now I was completely full and free to do whatever I want.
They trust you in a way.
They had no choice.
Yeah, what's basically gonna come out is
just my project, and I give it to you, and then it's your problem.
If you want to, if you hear something to play on it, do it. If not.
And but the thing was with Liars was, first I was a big fan of them, but second of all, it was also that their first album they toured with Sonic Youth, and I knew that. So it was like a sneaky plan. Like, if I do Liars, then I can approach Sonic Youth more easy. And then once you have Sonic Youth on your curriculum, basically the whole world wants to cooperate with you because it's such a relevant band.
I guess you had quite a good plan, because I guess this was then the period when you create instruments for many well-known bands.
Liars was the first, and Sonic Youth was the second. And then it exploded.
So that was
the master plan, basically. Yeah.
It was a good plan.
It was a good plan. It worked.
Maybe we can make a little break now.
Okay.
At the background, we are listening to Bismuth.
Yes, and this is the instrument, by the way, with the resonance you're now hearing.
This is your band or your solo thing?
This is my band with Arnold. I always consider myself not a very good musician, and he's I'm more into sound instead of music, and this guy is into music and rhythm, and he can drum and play everything.
Okay, let's listen for a few minutes. Torej, še vedno poslušate pogovor z Jurijem Landmanom, ki se te dni mudi na festivalu Sonika in v sklopu delavnic na Ljudmili predstavlja svoje inštrumente. So, Juri, You were saying something just before we went back on air about the lute and the traditional.
Yeah. You referred in the first 10 minutes shortly to other instruments. So I invent new instruments or unheard instruments. And the odd thing, what happened with the mood swinger, that's the one I made for Liars. Mm-hmm. I really had to explore how the scales worked, because my English was very lousy at that time, so mm-hmm. the instrument had to explain itself. Yeah.
Okay.
And this caused me to go on internet and do certain research about it, and then I discovered about this phenomenon called just intonation, which is an alternate way to scale the mm-hmm. the instrument. So the piano has a logarithmic scale, and in the guitar as well, but just intonation is based on fractions. And since I worked with the fractions on the bridge division mm-hmm. system, I realized, like, oh, perhaps there is an overlap in musical theory and what I do with my bar. Mm-hmm. And so this went on internet, and I to my big surprise, I ended up in first, I saw the Turkish Saz, mm-hmm. Which is like a guitar for Ryan, but it has an odd fret spacing. And this, together with the just intonation phenomenon, I was like, okay, perhaps there's other cultures that have my scale. Uh-huh. And then I discovered this Chinese instrument, which is 2000 before Christ.
Okay.
And it's exactly identical to my own instrument, so I rediscovered the wheel, basically 4,000 years too late. Yes. But it's kind of weird, because I'm coming from Glen Branca, Sonic Youth, and like the really loud, harsh, mm-hmm. Overtone-based noise rocks. And when you listen to Chinese music, it's like the most silent and quiet, relaxed music. But when you listen to, for instance, Glen Branca or the early Sonic Youth, there's obviously a lot of noise involved with it. But once you get experience with it, then you realize that there's a hidden layer in this noise, mm-hmm. which is kind of relaxing. It's very meditative. And that's because of the system with the bridge system. Mm-hmm. So when you basically, that's I always call this the noise order paradox. When you drop in more noise, mm-hmm. then in this noise a new order occurs, and this order is identical to the one before, and that's basically a fractal. Mm-hmm. So what the broccoli is compared to the trees and the Romanesco, that kind of stuff. It also occurs in sound. There's a lot of fractal structures in sound, mm-hmm. and this was the discovery that the noise from Sonic Youth is basically a fractal from pure harmony.
Pure China.
Yeah.
So in a way, what we're saying is that a lot of traditional instruments around the world use other types of frequency and scales and stuff. So and the shape of this instrument is what, a piece of wood?
It's a piece of wood with
seven strings. It's not like a stick, more like a plate.
Yeah, it's more like a table instrument.
It's more like a table instrument.
It's called I cannot pronounce it, because Ji Qing or something. Uh-huh, uh-huh. It's not the koto. The koto has bridges.
Yeah.
And there's also a Chinese variant, but it looks a bit like a koto, but then without the bridges, and it's just a field of strings, mm-hmm. and they play the harmonics on it.
Okay.
Yeah, and that you quickly mentioned the other cultures. Indeed, Indian scales are different from the Turkish ones, and the Turkish ones are different from the Indonesian ones, etc. But in fundament, it's all the Chinese scale. That's mm-hmm. basically the physics scale.
Okay.
And that's also the scale I'm using a lot, and Harry Partridge used that a lot in the 50s. And basically what happens is, so you have a string instrument, and then there's this bone from whatever, and some kind of an animal, and you make a flute out of it. But somewhere else in the world, this bone doesn't exist, so they made a flute out of a bamboo, for instance. And the bamboo has difficult sounds, different sounds than the bone. So they start adapting the scale of the strings to the other instruments, and so, for instance, they left out the seventh one, or they left out the sixth one, depending on which other instruments are available in that neighborhood. So basically, you have a whole collection of tones. That's mm-hmm. the fundamental system, and you just drop five symbols out of it, yeah. and then you have the Indian scale. If you drop five symbols out of it from another one, you have the Chinese scale. That's how it works.
So it was actually more the lack of possibilities that created this specific music around the world. Interesting. Where would
that's
I want?
That's at least my opinion. I'm quite strong
from
on my.
Yeah. At the end, I mean, at the end, you. So we have this totally acoustic material side of your creations, but yeah. then it's the electricity side or the electrification of this instrument. Mm-hmm. How do you approach this? I mean, do you search for sound within the acoustic range of this plate, wooden plate and string? What goes on with this? Do you make resonant bodies, or you always use magnets, pickups, electronics?
I use a lot of string resonance, not really the wood is just simple do-it-yourself wood from Bauhaus.
Okay.
Let me say this. I started on guitar, so I know what a pickup does and how a string responds on mm-hmm. or any other object. For instance, I use a lot of indirect reverberation. So you play the string, but the bridge is somewhere else with mm-hmm. another string, and the string hums along, and then I mix it.
Okay.
Yes. This is, by the way, also present in a piano. There's also mm-hmm. like resonant objects in it, in Steinways.
Mm-hmm.
So it has the same mechanisms. What I do a lot is the pickup has an aura of like 1 centimeter. So mm-hmm. when the string is 2 centimeters or 3 centimeters, you don't hear it. It has to be close to the pickup.
Yeah.
So I often make things that go like I hit it here and then I go nearby the pickup, so you get whoom.
Sort of mounts for the pickups that.
Yeah, so the pickup is basically it's getting closer or far away, and then you can have sounds that have the impression of reverse recordings.
Mm-hmm.
So you get whoop whoop whoop, that kind of stuff.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so that's how but that's basically, it's a pickup with 2 cables and I connect it to the output. So the electronic aspects of it are really rudimentary, very mm-hmm. simple. But
you always use
and
electronics anyway.
Yeah.
What was, for example, your latest thing in these workshops? You work on the kalimba, electric kalimba,
mm-hmm.
and Malevich strings.
Yeah.
Hard disk.
Yeah.
Can you talk a bit more about the hard disk hacking? What do you do with hard disk?
Yeah, hard disk is a funny one.
Because I guess it's a bit different than having a piece of wood and a string.
It's a funny one. I didn't discover this myself, so I stole this idea.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a useful idea, so it's. But the thing is that I was in Birmingham on an event, and some guy showed this to me, and he got the idea from, I don't know if it was Bosnia or Serbia or Croatia, but it's from that region.
Okay.
A guy who invented it, so I want to give credit to this guy. I don't know who it is, but...
It's here.
It's here, yeah. So it's from the south. Mm. And what he did is... you have the hard disk, and the hard disk has obviously the disk, but and the disk needs to spin. Yes?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the spinning,
sort of like a vinyl player or something, to read and to.
Yeah, yeah, spin. But the thing is that the electromotor is being driven by, what is it, 20 watts, 20 volts, or whatever it is, and you just strip the whole hard drive, so everything goes out,
mm-hmm.
And then. On the rear side of the disc, you see a few connection points.
Mm-hmm.
You just connect the connection points to the output of your guitar.
Okay.
So just a plus on one of the things, and the ground on the other one, and you mount it to the amp, and then your electromotor becomes a dynamo.
Uh-huh.
Because the dynamo and the electromotor are identical.
Okay.
Yes. And the disc functions as a flywheel.
Mm-hmm.
So. When you have the children toy and you pull it back and it writes,
okay.
It comes with a wheel inside, yes, mm-hmm. and which keeps it spinning. Yeah?
Okay.
So it spreads out the energy basically over time. So the disc has the function of the thing going on, and you just spin it, and it goes like boo, and it uh-huh. slows down. So basically, you're hearing the dynamo in combination with a flywheel.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's very nice. Yeah. You can also do it with a bicycle, basically. If you have picked the dynamo and you, mm-hmm. instead of connecting it to a lamp, to a light, you can just connect it to your amp and you spin the wheel and you have the same result.
Interesting.
But it's a very distinctive sound, because it's not one tone, it's a tone that falls down.
Mm-hmm. has actually more older range in this drop.
And it's especially when it's on a PA system, it's like this wild sub. So I can imagine. That's great.
Okay, we have a few more minutes, so maybe for the ending, I would maybe ask you, what are you preparing and working on for the Mota point, and when can we see it in Mota Point, actually?
Yeah, okay. And that we do that after the song, or you want to do it now?
And we do it now, and maybe at the end we let some music.
Okay, good. The thing is that I got invited by Neya from Mota to run a series of workshops, mm-hmm. which is good, because I'm doing that for 7 years. That's my main job, mm-hmm. and often I play as a closing day. Mm-hmm. Sorry, the hiccups. But I don't play here, unfortunately, because I think the music program was already filled, so I could mm-hmm. only do the workshops. So perhaps next year, mm-hmm. and then. So I'm doing that for 7 years, and it's totally fine. There's the music festivals and the academies where I do that stuff, and it's growing. But I also have a new ambition, and Mota is the seventh organization I'm doing this for, is that I travel with one suitcase. I don't have a driver's license, so mm-hmm. I travel by train, and it's always a hassle for me to carry all the bullshit around. So I was like, how can I solve this? I could. What if I start building collections in every city? For the next 10 years, mm. then I have a better access to the city, because there's a collection there for me, and there's friends who have the collection. Yeah. So I get the gigs more easy. I don't have to carry all the bullshit. That's really a good plan. Yeah, and the win-win situation is that you have, as a city, you have access to this collection, mm. and you can explore it, and you can start a band with it, or we can do a collaboration. I can become a part-time member of your band. Okay. So this is really like this really dreamy, idealistic approach. But I have a strong belief that when I start spreading out those collections, mm. and other builders are also adding their unique instruments to this collection, then you create your own museum with tools which are not available in any shop. So you have this unique music lab, and you can use it for educational purposes, so you can apply funding for it, mm. and teach children with it, because it's like a weird system. It's not like Do Re Mi, it's something else, but it's still music.
And it's basic.
Yeah, and I drum on Coca-Cola bottles, for instance, or the hard drive, and for kids that's very very fresh. So there's many, many ways to explore this entrepreneurship, basically. And so I have a strong belief that it will lead to something new. And hopefully Neya has the same approach, and we can make a sustainable relationship on this.
We hope to.
Yeah.
Anyway, Lyudmila guys and Sonika guys are always in the motion and always doing creative stuff, so I guess there will be always a space to come back.
Okay, good.
Yuri, to me you sound like a guy who always has a good plan.
Okay.
So I'm gonna wish you all the best with everything. Of course, we can invite everybody to check the workshops and stuff. So thank you for your time here in the studio, and we will be seeing you around Ljubljana for the next days, and I wish you good experience and good networking with your instruments. for the last thing, we're gonna listen to a few more minutes of your Bismuth band.
It's a weird song, by the way, but
let's hear it.
Let's hear it.
Tako, poslušali ste band Bismut Jurija Landmana, ki se te dni mudi v Ljubljani, seveda gre za nizozemskega glasbenika in izdelovalca eksperimentalnih glasbil. V teh dneh se seveda nahaja na festivalu Sonika, kot smo rekli, upamo, da ste se imeli, da ste uživali v intervjuju, sicer pa ga lahko najdete v naslednjih dneh na Ljudmili, v Motapointu ali pa v zavodu Atol. Več seveda na Soniki in s tem tudi zaključujemo današnji jutranji pogovor.